How's it going, and welcome to episode 53 of On The Wire, proud member of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On The Wire Pod. And of course, if you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me on the Twitter at 80 grade. That's all spelled out. And I am once again joined by Kevin Hastings, who you should be following on the Twitter at Hastings Kevin. This week marks the very first Fab Sunday we've seen since September of 2021. After looking over some of my Fab leagues, Kevin, I can say that I am definitely here for it, as we drafted a few of our listener leagues back in, I think the first one was in January. I think we started the draft in January, probably finished up in February. So there's definitely some room for improvement, at least in that first one, if not all three out of the five. How about you?
Yeah, absolutely. I also did a main event qualifier Fab League a little prior to that, maybe even December. It was the first main event qualifier whenever that went off. It was either December or early January. And yeah, even with some of the late things just happening over the past few days, even teams that we thought were pretty set may not be that way as we head into the first week of the season. And especially there's so many teams with nice full schedules, as you will point out here in a little while. So we have some opportunity to fill some holes with some players we might not normally really consider.
Yeah, I was thinking about it more and more. And I know you had trouble filling that first main event qualifier. I think you sat on that team or in that spot for 2 or 3 weeks before it finally filled up, if I'm not mistaken. And more I think about it, it's like the more I might do more Fab leagues earlier. Because especially the 12 teamers, maybe not like a 15 teamer, but a 12 teamer, I feel like you can take more risks in that kind of format, knowing that we have this Fab period coming up before the season even starts. Now, like I mentioned, that I would probably do it more so in a 12 teamer than a 15 teamer. And that's mostly because in my experience that doing Fab to a 12 teamer, that goes a long way throughout the season. Like I can confidently spread out my money in a 12 teamer doing Fab a lot easier, a lot more backup bids, a lot more options in the player pool that I'm comfortable with. 15 teamer might be a little bit more difficult to spend a lot of Fab early on, knowing that I have a lot less to play with throughout the rest of the season with the player pool being a little thinner, but it's something I might consider next offseason.
Yeah, it's a good time. Honestly, I have not looked at that team yet. I have begun putting my Fab lists together for Sunday with some obvious drops, some obvious pickups, whether I was considering them or not. They would be an improvement to my team. So definitely want to take a look at some of those players as well. But I haven't pulled that 15-team league up yet. I'm worried. It's been a while ago. I'm not sure I want to look at it yet.
The last team that you do. Oh, yeah. That's right. I remember doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
I wish I didn't, but I do remember it now. Yeah, we're going to get into a lot of that strategy a little bit later on in the pod regarding those obvious drops and when to draw the line, depending on how much draft capital you might have put into it. But for now, Kevin, let's get into, as we do during the season, into some news and notes that happened most recently that is going to affect Fab considerations. As we do this throughout the season, as a reminder, we're not going to touch on every news item, especially today. There's so much. There's a lot of other great pods on this network that touch on it a lot better and a lot more thoroughly than we are going to, but we're going to touch on the ones that may affect the options that you have in your leagues for bidding for Fab. So Kevin, I'm going to run down through these, get your take on this, and we'll get right to it.
All right. The first thing that stood out to me, because I've been grabbing him in a couple different places, especially my later drafts, is Josh Lowe. He's not going to make the opening day roster for the Tampa Bay Rays, as he was optioned down on Thursday of this past week. And so give me some advice here, Kevin. I need to determine whether or not I want to stash him a little bit longer, depending on my format. So in what size league or what certain format are you expecting to hold on to Josh Lowe, and for how long?
I think I'd hold on to him everywhere for now. I think this is something we probably expected, and if not expected, at least knew what was a good possibility with it being the Rays. They're going to do everything they can to save as much money as possible, get as much as many years of control of a player as possible. So this was likely all along. And yes, especially in FBC type formats, we only have 7 bench spots, no IL. This can become an issue as the season progresses, but it shouldn't be too much of an issue for most of our teams, at least for a couple of weeks. And he's a guy I would wait at least until the end of the, when we hit that deadline where they will not lose a year of control over Josh Lowe, and reevaluate if he doesn't come up by the end of April.
Yeah, I'd say end of April is probably where I'm going to be hitting, just because here's the thing, like Kiermaier already got hurt. Shocker. Big shocker. Yeah, Kevin Kiermaier is hurt. This is a scheduled tweet, all that. And he's still being optioned down. Like he's still not the number one choice to take over center field or any outfield spot for that matter, with Kiermaier already being hurt. May miss time, may not. We'll see. But I think it's an all but guarantee that Kiermaier is going to miss some time, and that Lowe wasn't the already an option, that he was already being sent down to manipulate this. So I think there's a big part of me that has the Vidal, he's going to get the Vidal Brujan treatment that he got last year. He comes up for a minute and then gets sent right back. I guess it's the Josh Lowe treatment from last year, because that's exactly what happened with him last year. I mean, it's no Edward Olivares. They didn't go back and forth with him. They're just like, no, you had your minute. Now you're back down and we'll see you next year. I worry about how long it's going to take and how much time he will see once he is up. But I would say if he's up, I do believe Josh Lowe is a future piece of the Rays. And once he is up and he is producing, I can see him being very useful. But I'm not sure how long I'm going to be willing to hold on to him, especially with the fact that the other thing is that they sent him down with his expanded rosters that they're going to have in the month of April. And the fact that they couldn't hold them up during those expanded rosters and then just sent them back down for 2 or 3 weeks in May, that made me a little bit more concerned as well. All right, going over to Oakland, Mark Kotze said that AJ Puck is set to open the season in the Oakland bullpen, but didn't rule out the possibility of him getting into the rotation at some point during the season. He also apparently comped Puck to the likes of Josh Hader, which is, you know, always an interesting thought. So question to you, Kevin, what is more likely if you had to choose one or the other? What's more likely to happen before or by the All-Star break? Puck is the clear closer, Hader style of the A's, or he's settled into a you can't take it away from me spot in the rotation?
I'm not sure which one is more likely, but I know what I hope happens. And this is, a lot of us have been hoping this would happen for a couple of seasons now. And that's AJ Puck should be a reliever. He's got nasty stuff. He hasn't been able to stay healthy when they try to stretch him out. And I really hope that is the path that this takes. The Athletics have also been historically known for building up relievers and trading them, trading their closer, trading their best relievers. That may or may not help his situation depending on where he would land. But I think that's what a lot of us would like to see happen with AJ Puck. I saw this news over the past couple of days. I am very fortunate to be in the Highland Dynasty League that Brett Sayre, James Anderson, Ian Kahn, and a couple of other guys put together. And we're in the 24th round. And when I saw this news, he went to the top of my queue. He's still 26 years old. It's 20-team Dynasty League, 24th round. So we're getting close to 500 players. He's still there. When I saw this from Mark Kotze, AJ Puck went to the top of my queue.
I'm hoping. Yeah, Puck still got 4 years of control after this year. So he doesn't become a free agent until 2027, his age 32 season. He's under team control next year. Isn't even arbitration eligible until 2024. Whereas Lou Trevino, the apparent closer for the A's right now, still has 2 more years of arbitration after this year is finished. And so he is, in my mind, the more likely to be traded in that scenario. Yep. Like you mentioned, Oakland has that history of doing that, building somebody up. And I feel like they tried to do that with Trevino, but obviously he faltered toward the end, probably unfortunately really close to the trade deadline, and it didn't work out. So they've got 1 more year to build him back up and trade him along with anybody else that's not nailed down. But Puck would not be in that situation unless he was like somebody that they somebody really wanted and they got a really good deal. Obviously not going to be the guy that they're shopping around.
Yeah, it works out perfect for the Josh Hader scenario. A couple of years ago, he was not the closer, but two right. and a third innings and six strikeouts. That's pretty nice. And yeah, that's the path
still valuable.
I hope they take. Absolutely, 100%. Absolutely.
All right, we'll stay in the bullpen, but we'll go up to Toronto. And everybody's favorite spring training headline. Somebody does something like this every single year, if not multiple. Jordan Romano is walking his dog, as one does, and apparently slipped and sprained his ankle. Charlie Montoya said that he does expect Romano to be ready for opening day. But here's my question, Kevin. How much will Julian Merriweather go in week one of Fab this year based on this news? And will it be more or less than his average bid from last year?
It will definitely be less. It will not be $300 in some leagues. And I'm not touching the situation much like I didn't last year. Fortunately, I did not get involved in the Blue Jays bullpen bidding wars. They expect Romano to be ready for opening day. If he's not, I don't think this is something that's going to linger, or we might have been hearing more concerns from them by now. I think if I was going to do anything, and you put this in the notes as well, if I was going to do anything, put a dollar or two on Yimi Garcia just in case, but I'm not spending a lot of money here.
Yeah, that's the major difference this year compared to last year's situation with the Toronto bullpen, is that they have Yimi Garcia, who has closing experience. He proved it in Miami. He still did well in Houston, even though he wasn't the capital C closer there. And so you would assume he would have first dibs at the job or at the opportunity, even if it's not for a long period of time. You know what? A save in April, though, counts just as much as a save in September. And so if Romano is going to miss even the first 4 days, yeah, I'm throwing a buck or two on Garcia in the hopes that he gets in there and Romano's actually, I hope Romano's fine. I hope everybody's fine, but you have to be prepared for the worst, right?
Absolutely.
I'm definitely not spending triple digits on Julian Merriweather. I don't recommend anybody else do it either. All right, we'll get out of the bullpen then. This is more of a reminder to everybody, something that was brought to my attention recently. Tim Anderson has a 2-game suspension to fulfill to start the 2022 season. With the White Sox only have 3 games in opening weekend, in my mind, Anderson is an obvious sit for the first lineup lock of the season, you know, in weekly league, especially in FBC. So Anderson's going to be a sit for me anywhere I've got him. But Kevin, should I be interested in the likes of Josh Harrison getting extra playing time or anywhere else on the south side of Chicago to fill in?
Yeah, Josh Harrison is definitely an option, and as are others that we'll talk about later in the show. But I agree 100% sitting Tim Anderson. There's several teams that have a 4-game set. So even if a guy gets a day off, he's going to get 3 times the at-bats as Tim Anderson. And I know some might say Tim Anderson's going to be playing this game with a chip on his shoulder, and that very well could be, and he can have a great game. It's still not worth it for somebody that's going to get at least 3 times the number of at-bats.
You play the odds, people. As simple as that. It's roulette when it comes down to number of at-bats or innings that you can get through out there. All right, back into bullpens, because that's what everybody wants to hear about. Don Mattingly said that Dylan Flora will not break camp with the Marlins as he's dealing with his own issues. So my question really revolves around who is... Anthony Bender is the, quote, obvious pick here to close games out. But I think I mentioned it. A lot of other people have mentioned as well. Just because they're the obvious, talented bullpen piece doesn't mean he's going to be the guy that Mattingly wants to give the ball to. So my question is, should we be paying attention to Anthony Bass to get another shot? They did pay him after he had his success in Toronto a couple years ago. Is that something that you think Mattingly will go toward and keep Bender in that fireman role, that eighth inning role where he's been so good most of the time?
I think that's an absolute possibility. So it's similar to the Toronto situation, right? Don't spend a lot of money. Spend a couple of dollars on Bass, just like we would spend a couple of dollars on Yimi Garcia. I think it's a very similar situation.
Yeah, and you also have, it's also team context. Miami's going to be better. We get that. And then there's also the whole note that you threw out there, I think last week, that every ballpark is going to have a humidor now.
Yeah.
And so places like Miami, their offense could go up, that they could go up in those very humid climates that have normally seen pitching success. I'm not saying it will. Obviously, we'll have to see what happens. There might be four different balls in play for all we know in Major League Baseball. So a lot of variables.
And we don't know how the balls were stored previously. That's, from what I understand, that's going to have a lot to do with this as well. Even
not
though
about where the stadium
humidor,
where they play in.
Yeah, we don't know if they were stored in an air-conditioned room or in a 100-degree equipment room. So that will, like you said, so many variables. But yeah, it's something that we're going to monitor. And thank goodness we'll be seeing things from Dr. Meredith Wells soon.
You're right. My point is, too, that this team context, it's still Miami. Since you don't know, there's no guarantee here. This is not something you want to be spending triple digits on. You don't want to go Julian Merriweather on Anthony Bender, or definitely not Anthony Bass as well. So keep an eye on the situation. But I, like you said, a couple bucks on Bass. I'm actually probably, Bass is going to be more readily available in most of your leagues than Bender is as well.
Oh, for sure.
And then a piece of news that just came across the desk that I wanted to just throw out there is that Joe Maddon announced that Reed Detmers officially is going to make the Angels, which will probably be a six-man rotation, of course, with Ohtani being in the rotation. But Reed Detmers is one of those six to start the season. He is 100% rostered across all the main events that I've drafted thus far. And only 61% in online championships. So these are those 12 teamers that we'll be referencing most of the season. When we say 12 teamers and percentages, we're more than likely referencing the online championships, the leagues on the NFBC platform. So does the guaranteed spot in the rotation make him a target of yours in a 12 teamer that he's available?
I think if I need some pitching, I'm definitely looking at that. In a six-man rotation, he will line up for his first start at home against the Marlins. And then his second start will be at Houston about 7 days later, with they do have one off day in there. In the immediate future, if he's available, especially if I need some pitching depth, he's definitely someone that I would roster. And that first full week of the season, if I need a starter, I'd probably throw him out there against the Marlins.
Yeah, I think that especially in this first week of Fab 2, Detmers is somebody, especially in the shadow league, you got to keep an eye on, and he's got to be in the list in your waterfall bids. And this is your opportunity to get somebody to fill a hole, especially if you had a Fab league like we did back in like January, February, and you're going to have a hole by now. You're going to have to fill it. Make sure that you've got a long list of options, because you're not going to be able to fill five holes, but you need to be able to fill half of those if you have that many. So make sure you have five or six options listed so that you get some of them. And you can also keep your bids lower, because you're just happy with getting something to fill the hole. And in Detmers, especially in a starting pitching hole at this stage of the game, is somebody you should be filling that hole with. All right, and then the big news that everybody's talking about, we'll end it here, but we'll probably talk about it for a while, is Craig Kimbrell finally got traded. Everybody's been drafting him, assuming it was a done deal, and they started sweating bullets, I think, by now, because it still hadn't happened yet, and the opening day is less than a week away. He finally happened. He got traded. Lo and behold, he got traded to the Dodgers for a 1-for-1 trade with AJ Pollock heading to the White Sox. So before we get into the Kimbrel aspect of this, or the bullpen aspect of this, Kevin, let's start with AJ Pollock. And tell me, what do you think, first, what is his exit from the Los Angeles outfield do for the rest of the options the Dodgers have at their disposal?
My first instinct, and I've seen some out there on Twitter, that's is what they believe as well. My first instinct is Chris Taylor goes to the outfield, and they're going to give Gavin Lux a run here at the beginning of the season, because I think they'd rather do that now, figure out if he is going to be part of their future before we get later in the season. And even though every game counts the same, they'd just rather figure it out now than as we get into the pennant race portion of the season. One other thing that I have seen in a couple of spots, and I was pondering this as well, last offseason, I was one of those that was very excited about Edwin Rios, but then they did end up re-signing Justin Turner. And so he did not get to make many appearances last season. big power, lots of strikeouts. We know the profile, but there is also that option with Max Muncy playing DH instead of first base a little bit. Maybe they get him in, Max Muncy in at second base, and Edwin Rios can DH. Edwin Rios is the one that if I have a free spot and I don't have anything else that I need to do with it, he's somebody I'm throwing a dollar or two after and trying to stash him for a little while. And this is completely off the subject. This really becomes a possibility for Rios if Cody Bellinger does not get things figured out. They got all kinds of things going on out there in LA, as great as that lineup is.
Yeah, I was really hoping we could talk about our boy, Zach McKinstry,
as we talked about
last year so much early in the season. But he's already been sent down to the minors. Not to say that he can't, you know, he doesn't have options. He can come back up, sure. But it is unfortunate that he won't be in that Edwin Rios situation that you're talking about. And yeah, I like the Rios. I was, when Muncy was at his peak of being hurt, the quote, the ghost hurt in the offseason, I did grab some exposure to Rios. I think I have him like two or three places. I'm glad I have him. I'm not necessarily going out to grab him, but he's going to be somebody that if I have a hole in that, I'm going to be making sure Rios is in my queue, my lineup, my waterfall bid list, and see if that works out for sure. So that talks about LA, but AJ Pollock is going to the White Sox. And obviously Pollock has some injury concerns of his own. He has some history, at least when he's out there, he's producing. So my question to you is, why do the White Sox hate their third overall pick from the 2019 draft in Andrew Vaughn so much that they are going to go out and get a new outfielder that they just forced Andrew Vaughn to play almost all of last year? We saw some rumors that he was taking second base drills, and then they signed Josh Harrison. Obviously they have other options as well. So what's going on with the White Sox here?
My hope is that this is an insurance policy. And if you look at roster resource right now, they have Gavin Sheets and Adam Engel probably platooning as a designated hitter. And with the reports that after Vaughn had left the game a couple of days ago, they were concerned about a hip pointer. Now I think it's just a bruise. They're expecting him back much sooner. And I hope this is just a big insurance policy, because there's no way that Adam Engel and Gavin Sheets should be playing in front of Andrew Vaughn. And I don't think they will once Vaughn is healthy. So I'm hopeful that's the case. We saw Vaughn not get as many plate appearances as we would hope throughout last season, but I have Andrew Vaughn on several teams, so I'm watching this closely. I want to see how often he's sitting, how often he's taken out of games for a matchup pinch hitter, and vice versa when he has started the game on the bench, how often he's playing designated hitter. If they're trying to get him one position to play nearly regularly, we haven't had a whole lot of spring training this season, and now he's missed the last few days of it. So it's something to watch really closely. I think with a healthy Vaughn, this hurts Adam Engel the most, and maybe Gavin Sheets a little bit as well.
Yeah, I mean, Gavin Sheets obviously has the least amount of flexibility to move around and do some things. Obviously, Sheets coming up as a first baseman, and he's made a name for himself as being a DH first or hitter first prospect, if you will. He's not moving around the diamond, and at least Andrew Vaughn has shown that he's willing to. Not only the diamond, but obviously the grass as well, as he played most of the year last year in left field to cover for Eloy. Yeah, man. The cynic in me as well is thinking, hey, the White Sox are thinking, we started his clock way too early. Like, he was drafted in 2019. We had the lost 2020 season. Let's get him right up. Let's get him up and let him get going. Oh, no, that's right. We're going to have to start paying him arbitration really soon. What can we do to still get him? He's still here. We're not going to send him back down, but to minimize the amount of production that we see out of him so that we can still keep his arbitration numbers down. That's the cynic in me. I really hope that is just me
quite
being
possible.
Paranoid.
He was drafted to be Jose Abreu's replacement. They could, that's very possible scenario.
Yeah. So we'll see how long that takes for him to replace him, though, at first. All right, let's talk about the other end of this deal. So I'm assuming with Kimbrel going to the Dodgers in this first week of Fab, we're going to see a lot of Blake Treinen, Daniel Hudson, and Bruce Doug Gratterall drops. As this now, in the last couple of weeks, we started hearing talks about how Dave Roberts wasn't sure that they were going to go with one person. He thought that they might go with more of a committee or at least see where the tides take them. But now with Kimbrel being in LA, he's the guy. Like, he is the capital C closer. He said today that he's really looking forward to putting his closer shoes back on after spending his time with the White Sox, not in that role. So he's the guy there. So anybody who took shots late on Daniel Hudson, like myself, or Bruce Gatterall, or spent up for Blake Treinen throughout the season in Fab Leagues, offseason, that they're going to be dropped in there. My question, though, is I start questioning, how aggressive should people be? And you talk about this a lot, Kevin. Don't be more aggressive with your drops. But like, how aggressive should people start being with their drops when you spent that kind of draft capital on a guy that you thought you might have been taking a little bit of a risk? They could have signed Jansen back in. They might have signed somebody else for that matter. But Trinan's ADP in online championships from February and March, the last 2 months, was 129. He had a min pick of 82, max of 200, sure. But both those min and max picks were made in the month of March as well. So again, we're talking as early as the end of the 7th round, averaging the end of the 11th round in a 30-round 12-team draft. Is that enough draft capital to hold on to him and ride it out? Or is this just, we know what the situation is, let's drop it? And how does that affect other choices that you might make in a draft?
I think unless I have an incredibly deep stacked pitching staff, I'm holding Treinen. Now, we wouldn't have spent an 11th round pick, or definitely not a 7th round pick, on him knowing this was going to be his role. But we talk about guys like Chad Green, Colin McHugh all the time, and Blake Treinen's going to be one of those guys now. He might get a save or two throughout the season, but you'll have him in there for the ratios, the strikeouts, and definitely, this goes without saying, but if you're in a holds league, you're definitely keeping him. But I think I hold on to him, and probably throughout the season. I don't think I'll have many teams where I'll have a 7th starting pitcher I'd rather have in the lineup than Blake Treinen.
That's a fair point. And who's to say that Treinen doesn't get multiple innings now that he is guaranteed to be in that 7th, 8th inning role, more opportunities to go an inning in a third, inning in 2/3, maybe in 2 full innings when they really need him to. And obviously that brings his stock up in those scenarios that you're talking about as your final pitcher in your lineup, especially in the 15 teamers. So it's something I still think we're going to see plenty of Treinen drops, more out of anger and fear than anything else.
The question is, if this deal had not happened until Monday, how many Kimbrel drops would we have seen Sunday night?
He's the same. He's the same situation you're talking about with Treinen.
But he's never been good when he's not the closer. Right.
When he's
not. And that's another thing about Treinen. So we're assuming that last year's first half and second half were because he was a closer for the Cubs and not a closer for the White Sox. That's an assumption we're all making. I agree with that assumption. Doesn't mean we're right. So Kimbrel may end up with this job yet.
Treinen did come out recently and say that he doesn't necessarily like being the closer.
Right.
Like, he actually prefers it. Situations. He's literally the opposite of Kimbrel.
Exactly.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right. I think that's enough news. I'm sure we'll touch on some other news items as we move along. All right. All right. But that goes into what we're talking about as far as like the strategy that you have in this first week of Fab. And we talked a little bit about the when to drop somebody, how much draft capital is too much till you got to hold on to them. But Kevin, this is week one of Fab. We got a lot of weeks to go after this. And you're not going to be doing your Fab the same way in weeks one through four as you are in the final 4 weeks of the season, for sure. So tell me, in this first week, what are you focusing on? What are you looking for, especially in those leagues that we've drafted at least multiple weeks ago? Now, if you're in a draft today, and it finishes up 3 hours before Fab, yeah, you could Fab. You might not need to, though. You're not going to Fab the same way as you are with the team that you draft at the beginning of March or before that. And if I'm not mistaken, most of your Fab leagues you drafted before today. And so how are you going into week one as far as like looking for the type of target? Are you looking for the first 4 days, just that first 4 days of games, or are you looking more long term?
If I have Tim Anderson, I'm looking at the first 4 days. Honestly, that's a very specific situation, but there are things like that. Other than that, I don't think I'm putting too much stock into a team only having 3 days scheduled the first week. The second week, we start seeing some teams that have both Monday and Thursday off, or what's really horrible is early in the season, some of those teams, not every team always plays on Friday.
Yeah, that's weird.
So I think there's a 5-game week where they screw us in both the first half and second half of the week for NFBC lineup settings. And that's just so frustrating. But definitely start looking ahead at, who's only got 2 games Monday through Thursday is typically when we see that. But in general, the first thing I'm looking at is right now, every team, any obvious drops, who got injured, who didn't end up with the role I thought they might, and filling those spots with somebody where, if not the 4-day weekend, the first full week, I have to have a scenario in my head where I may use for me to want them taking up a spot on my roster right now. I think we got to start right out of the gate, maximizing innings pitched, maximizing plate appearances. Of course, we want the highest quality we can get as we're doing that, but we've been talking about it all off season. And in order to do that, you have to look ahead. You have to have a player ready for next weekend when they're going to be facing 3 lefties for some reason or anything along those lines. So the first obvious one is, Tim Anderson. And I have him on a few teams. That's why it's a easy one to bring up. Tim Anderson's not in my lineup in week one. You're absolutely right about that.
Yeah, we talked about this in the offseason as well. Hopefully you drafted a shortstop to be your middle infielder. And you can obviously just push that shortstop into Tim Anderson's spot and then find another middle infielder off the wire to fill in. Not that that'll be easy to do, but at least it'll be easier because all the good shortstops are gone. Unless a guy we're going to talk about is still out there in Jeremy Pena, or Bryson Stott breaks the roster for the Phillies as well. And something like I'm looking at is as rotations are starting to be announced, as we're starting to realize who we had a general idea of who most teams 1, 2, and 3 were. But then as you start filling the 4 spot and the 5 spot, and then in most cases the 6 spot, especially with these expanded April rosters that we're going to see, look for who that number 4 and in some cases the number 5 starter are going to be. They're most likely to get the 2-start option in week 2 in that second full week or the first full week of the season, as most teams, as you noted, have 3 or 4 games in this first weekend, whether they're playing Thursday through Sunday, or they have the weird they play on Thursday and they're off on Friday, or they're off on Thursday they start on Friday. Teams have 3 or 4.
Yeah, and that goes back to the Blake Treinen thing too. Very few of us are going to have 7 starting pitchers, assuming we're using 2 closers in a 9-man pitching rotation. We may not have 7 pitchers that are going to see starts in the opening weekend. So that's when if you don't have Blake Treinen, you don't have Chad Green, you need to go get a middle reliever quite possibly for this weekend. The couple of innings and few strikeouts like you said earlier, they count as much in this 4-day week as they count if we're trying to get them to scrape a couple of standings points together in September.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And we've touched on that throughout the offseason, but now we're in it, right? This is fab. Yeah, this exactly. This is coming up. Got to remember, you want those innings regardless. And a couple of guys, at least I'm going to bring up in the starting pitching option, may not start this first couple days. They're going to be at the back end of a rotation. And most of the guys that are on the wire probably aren't starting this week for starters. You're picking them up at the back end of a rotation, or they just want a job and that's why they're available. People weren't sure. And so if you want to gain those extra innings, look for the Colin McHughes, look for the Brent Suters, look for the Trinan is not available, but he will be next week. But those types of pitchers that are still out there just to get those innings. $1, put 7 of them in each queue and put $1 on each of them. Happy with whatever you get. Hopefully you get as many innings as possible from whoever you get. And you don't spend a lot of money that way. And you can pick up that other pitcher the following week. Because a lot of these starters too that we're talking about, unless they're like really blowing it up in spring training, they still are going to be available in week 2 fab. Because they don't have the little baseball next to their name as people are looking through the free agent market in their leagues. Hey, they're not starting. I'm not worried about them this week. I'm gonna move on. Some of those players are still going to be available in week 2. One thing I wanted to bring up, and I tweeted this out, but of course I tweeted it out and it got 2 likes. I think you were one of them, Kevin. And then later on in the day, we see a Bloom board go out. And of course, everybody's following the Bloom boards as they should. And it gave a more graphical synopsis of what I was trying to get at. And that is the fact that if you're not sure how much to bid on certain players in week 1, take a look at what's been happening in the most recent drafts, and specifically these main event drafts that just happened in Vegas. Some are finishing up as we're recording this on Friday in New York as well. And so you'll have results in ADP from those by the time Fab rolls around on Sunday evening, along with the most recent online championships that have happened over the weekend. And if players that are available in your league are going at high picks because things have changed or the market is just more privy to what's going on in these drafts, more than likely the market of your draft league, your league mates, is going to be high as well. And so if you really want somebody, you're going to know that you're going to have to pay up depending on if a guy went in the 30th round or if he went in the 20s or even the teens rounds of these drafts. And again, it might not be the right fit for you, even though a player is really popular in a draft, doesn't mean you have to go out and bid triple digits on somebody. Like, you don't have to get Tyler Naquin for $150 just because if somebody else in your league is going to. If he doesn't fit your roster or your holes that you're trying to fill, sure, throw 20, 30, 40 bucks on him, even though he's going to go for 80 to 100. Keep your honest bid. I'm okay with that, but don't force yourself to go after somebody just because the market is going after him hard, unless he fills an obvious need. I don't know if you feel differently depending on the type of player, Kevin, but I think that looking at these ADPs is a good synopsis or a good way of measuring whether or not these players are going to go for a high dollar amount in your first FAB period.
Yeah, absolutely. And a player that we have later in the outline, but I'm just going to skip ahead to him right now because he fits this scenario. He also has a lot to do with our previous point, and that is Carlos Hernandez of the Kansas City Royals. Drafted in 100% of the main events, but he's only rostered in 46% of online championships. And he got a lot of helium towards the end of draft season. So most of those are the ones that were drafted recently. There's a little bit of discrepancy out there. The Royals have not announced their starting rotation. Roster Resource has him listed as their 5th starter. But on their starters schedule grid, they have him pitching the 3rd game of the season. We don't know. And here's the thing. He got blown up in a bad way in his first 2 outings of the spring. He's got an 11-plus ERA this spring. Who knows if he's just working on certain pitches? It's the kind of thing that typically does not concern me in spring training. However, it's to the point now where he's going to have one more start prior to the start of the season. And depending on how that goes with all of the young pitchers the Royals have, he may or may not end up in this rotation that I have assumed this entire offseason he would be in. And what that's going to do is that's going to keep the price down this week. because he's going to get picked up in every league. But with an 11-something ERA through two spring training outings, that may bring that price down. So keep that in mind when you're making the bids. But a player like that, I think, is exactly who you're talking about. 100% of main events, but available in over half of online championships.
And, and those spring training stats, as much as everybody likes to say, they don't matter.
People we look at them.
They see them.
Yep.
They see guys going over 19, or they see Wander's, what, he's like 3 for 20 or something like that. And like, oh, he's done. And people right. are talking, whether or not it's all for show or not is probably in up in the air. But I'm not opposed to playing games with your league mates being like, oh, look at this 11 ERA on this guy. He's terrible. And if your league mates can't make up their own decisions, then you know, a win's a win. That's
chip involved for sure.
All right, let's get into some options. And I think we're going a lot of different directions, I think, with some of these recommendations. So these aren't going to be fits for everybody. All right. So I'm going to tell you right now, like half of my players, I'm not bidding on them that I'm going to talk about because they're not going to fit. And I have 5 NFBC fab leagues as well between TGFBI and GLARF. Those are 15 teamers. My pool is going to be way different. And then my 3 on the wire listener leagues are 12 teamers, obviously. And that pool is going to be way different as well. And the way I drafted each team was very different. I definitely took a mindset throughout the my draft season of trying a bunch of different things out. Now I have my guys, as everybody who follows me on Twitter knows, like I have plenty of shares of Aaron Ashby and Josiah Gray, but like I have a lot of mixture of how I built my teams throughout. So I'm going to name a couple of guys here in different categories. Just fair warning, they're not going to fit most of my teams, never mind your teams. But these are guys I think that are that I think a lot of people forgot about during draft season, and they might fill a need. They might fill a hole based on what you need. And that's why we do this in categories, right? We do this by power, speed, and then pitching side. We break it down in strikeouts and win standing categories, counting categories, and ratios. And so there's a lot of different reasons you are bidding on a guy, even though they're valuable to the market, doesn't mean they're valuable to you, and vice versa. They could be more valuable to you than the market. I mean, is just willing to know who's out there and what you might need to fill. Like, Kevin, I'm going to get you. I got your names here. I'm going to just throw up the names that I threw out here as so people can keep an eye on there. And this, again, we're starting with power. So we're looking at guys that might be able to chip in some home runs, some RBIs. And the first one on here is somebody we brought up a couple weeks ago with Matt Williams. And as I like to say, Colin Moran is the cause of and solution to every team's problem this offseason, according to both Homer Simpson and Matt Williams. So Moran obviously found a club to take him on for 1 year. He signed a 1-year major league deal with the Cincinnati Reds, who obviously are going through their own changes this offseason. And he is, again, major league deal. He's on the roster. He's on the opening day roster. And it's sure looking like he's going to play regularly for them in Cincinnati. Of course, in that ballpark, everybody's talking about Tommy Pham. He found a good opportunity to sign with Cincinnati as well as they are trying to retool. But Moran, the difference is Moran is 1% rostered in online championships and he's only been drafted in 13% of the main events that have finished by the time we recorded this. And Roster Resource has him as the everyday DH. Now, I don't necessarily buy that. I think the Reds are going to maneuver a lot of their players in and out of that DH spot. As we alluded to, I'm hoping Mike Moustakas sees some time in there if he's healthy. And they obviously have 17 outfielders still to feed, even though they traded away Winker. They still have options there. But Colin Moran does, with the Reds, has 4 games in the first set of games. He does have some pop in his bat. He is pretty streaky. He can get into an opportunity to, if he is playing on a regular basis, he's going to hit probably in the middle of that lineup at this point, the way it's constructed. And he could add in those extra counting stats there. The only negative, yes, he has 4 games. They're outside of Cincinnati, so he doesn't get the ballpark to start the season, but it's still 4 straight games. The other 2 names that are readily available in most leagues, Bobby Bradley, with all of his faults, he is still the starting first baseman for the Cleveland Guardians. He has more power than anybody knows what to do with in that bat, and he is readily available as he's been drafted in 31% of main events and 7% of online championships. So if you do need to fill a power hole, he's somebody that I think is readily available and probably should be at least keeping an eye on, if not first base, that obviously that corner. But things happen and you need to fill those holes with a power bat. He's going to be one of my top choices if I find myself in that situation. So these are guys in the power department that I think, if they fit a hole that I need, are boring guys that I think I'm going to be able to get pretty cheap on the cheap on in the first week of Fab.
Yeah, absolutely. And they all have a spot. And you're 100% correct the way you preface this entire conversation, especially this early in the season. All of our teams are so different, so many different formats, so many different league sizes, so many different rules, that it's not, nobody is going to be a fit for every team. But these are all guys that do have a place. And even in shallower leagues, when you're going to look for somebody you'd rather have, and he's only rostered in 13% of leagues my size, but mine is one of them. So sometimes we start digging a little deeper. But yeah, every one of these guys has a place. I think Colin Moran probably gets the most playing time, maybe not so much more than Bobby Bradley, but at least the same amount. I think with Mike Moustakas already having an injury scare in spring training, and then it ended up being okay, I think the obvious move is just swapping him from what roster resource has, right? Let Colin Moran play third base, move Moustakas to the DH. Either way, I think Moran's going to be in that lineup.
So who you got eyeing for if you got a power hole in your first week due to injury or due to somebody not winning a job or what have you, who might you be looking at?
I have a couple of very specific guys and then a general guy. One, if you drafted early in shallow leagues, even in shallow two catcher leagues, check, he's probably not available. He's even rostered in 82% of Yahoo leagues, but check, if Mitch Garver is available, even in a single catcher league, he needs to be rostered. 82%, like I said, Yahoo, he's set to hit third in the Texas Rangers lineup. So we're talking about somebody that could get the plate appearances and in the part of the lineup as Salvador Perez, JT Realmuto, Will Smith. We're looking at somebody that could be in that category, and he's available in almost a fifth of Yahoo leagues. So check in your one catcher leagues, even your shallow two catcher, probably not, but check your line from last year. Always check. Another one, you mentioned shortstop earlier. We were talking about Tim Anderson. I really like Paul DeJong, and it's not just his spring training. I was starting to keep an eye on him when I heard about him working with Doug Latta in the offseason. This is the hitting instructor that made Justin Turner a superstar, JD Martinez, Paul DeJong. We know he's got power. If he can learn some contact skills, he even has a nice little bit of chip in speed. He starts making contact again. I think he's right back in the lineup every day for the Cardinals. We talked about last week, keep an eye on how Keston Hiura's spring is going. It could not be going any better. He is still striking out about a third of the time, so I guess it could be going a little better. But he is hitting the snot out of the ball this spring. He is something. He's 50% rostered in online championships. I have a feeling that has been going up, and most of those leagues where he is rostered are the ones that have drafted recently. Take a look. Definitely, if you drafted early, probably a better chance he is available. And then one guy that I always like, he'll be in my article all year long. He was all of last year. I'll bring him up on this show all year long because he's never going to play every single day, but he plays enough, Brad Miller, that he can contribute, especially in the power department. And he's nearly always available if you need somebody to fill in. He's right now probably strong side of a platoon, but he usually ends up getting a few more plate appearances than just that strict platoon role.
He finds a way into the lineup when they deal with injuries, and they had plenty of opportunities last year. The Phillies are already dealing with injuries as well as all the rumors that Matt Vierling, could secure the starting center field job due to those outfield injuries as well. So Brad Miller could easily get more at-bats. And I think that the young one was a very good slash obvious call out, especially with the shortstop need, as you're talking about with Tim Anderson, as Oliver Marmol, the new manager for the Cardinals, he's got his back. Like, he went out and said that it's short. The shortstop position is the youngs to lose. Like,
and he's one of those interesting cases. 7% rostered in online championships, but 88% in the main events that just happened.
Yeah, of course, the main events, not only are they 15 teamers, but they are also just drafted. The Vegas Wizards drafted later. Last weekend.
I think that's
the
a lot to do with
are drafting right now, and there'll be more main events drafting all the way up until the season. So that's not too surprising, but that is a big
gap.
It's a big gap. Yeah. All right, well, that's enough power there. There's almost always power to be had. So again, I'm going to repeat this 5 times every episode. Make sure you have multiple options that you're looking at so that you're not bidding $80 or $90 when you could just bid $30 and be happy with who you get. And sometimes it's not even $30. Sometimes you're down to $10 or $9 and you're still getting a bat that is comparable. Because let's be honest, most of the players that are on your wire are comparable to each other unless some other extenuating circumstances are arising and they've gotten a lot more playing time or they're moving up in the order or they're a rookie that they're getting the call up. So obviously there are things that come up, but most of the time, if you throw a dart at a bunch of players, you're going to be happy. As long as a dart hits one of them, you're going to be happy with what they give to you in comparison to the other options that you had on your list. So don't feel like you have to get a certain guy.
That's a great point. And we were tagged in our pitcher list plus Discord earlier today. Not sure if you saw that. Someone was asking about Craig Kimbrel being available in the first FAB period for their league. They have Scott Barlow and Soto from Detroit as their closers. So my response was, I could see this being my one big move that I try to make while still keeping my budget for the rest of the season. And I believe it was $100 fab league. I said it will take at least, he said bids go low in his league. It will still take at least double digits. And I'd be comfortable going up to $19 or $20. It is a definite upgrade. I said, but the reason I wouldn't go more than that, at this point, we don't have to have anybody. There's nobody we have to get, especially in that. It's obviously an upgrade for his team. But he does have two closers, two people that right now we believe to be the closers to his team. So that's a great point. We don't necessarily have to have the $90 player. Bid 30 on him. Like I always say, I probably won't get him, but put your bid on him. And then have supplemental bids because there's nobody yet that we have to have.
Yeah, agreed. All right, let's move on to some speed, sticking with bats, and we'll some speed options out there. And the only guy I really want to bring up is somebody we mentioned as our moving targets in the offseason. I don't have enough. I thought I would have more shares or more exposure to Jorge Mateo than I do, but I might still be looking to bid on him where he's available. Now he's 100% drafted in all these main events. So these 15 teamers, you can take more, shots at those guys who haven't won roles yet, but 47% rostered across online championships. So these 12 teamers, more than half of the leagues, they are available in these 12 teamers. And though the Orioles have not set not only their roster, Jorge Mateo's making the roster. It's just in what capacity you think he's going to. And this spring training, he's batting most of the spring training stats. And I know I joked about this earlier. They actually don't matter. you're looking for strikeouts and you're looking for walks. Those are the two big ones that you really want to try to pay attention to on both sides of the ball, to be honest, more so the walks. But Mateo, just through the 20 at bats he's gotten so far in spring training, as we're recording this, still batting 350. He's got two bombs. He has stolen a base, and that's the thing I'm looking for the most, is I'm looking for the intent. He's only attempted one, but he was successful, and he doesn't necessarily run a lot in spring training historically, 3 or 4 throughout the course of spring training. And so the fact that he does have one under his belt shows me that at the very least he's comfortable with his back, which was bothering him at the end of last season. I mean, he's still going to be a threat in the base pass. And if he's a threat on the base pass in a even somewhat regular basis, he can, at the very least, help you win that category all by himself with the kind of speed that he has. And everybody's always saying they didn't want to chase stolen bases in their draft. This is the kind of guy that if he's available, if you didn't chase stolen bases, you should be going after him or the likes of him in your first week of fab period to fill a hole made by some another dart that you threw that didn't work out. I'm not saying you have to get him and drop somebody of value, but if there was another hole that another dart you threw that didn't hit, then Mateo is somebody you should be keeping an eye out for if you need those stolen bases. And if he's playing regularly in the middle infield, he's going to get dual eligibility really quickly in the NFBC platform, as he only has outfield eligibility right now. More than likely, he's not playing the outfield this year, or at least not regularly. He's probably playing second base or shortstop, or he's bouncing between the two. And to get that dual eligibility doesn't hurt at all. So he'll be somebody in those shallower leagues where he's available, I will be keeping an eye out for, unless I'm so deep in stolen bases that it's not worth keeping an eye out for.
Absolutely. 100%. And the great thing about it is we know he's going to run. We've known that since the time he was sitting in the minors, being optioned and sitting on the bench in Oakland. We knew when he got playing time, he would run. But this little bit of pop is nice to see, right? He prorated his plate appearances last season out over a season, and he's a double-digit home run hitter. Also with what he's doing so far this spring. So it's not empty stolen bases. One concern I have is it appears he's hitting eighth with Torinos behind him. That may hurt his number of stolen base attempts. They're not going to stop him from running. He's still going to run. But if there's two outs, they're not going to risk Torinos leading off the next inning. So I'd like to see him either move down to the nine spot or move up above. Is it Ramon Urias that hits in front of him, I believe?
Yeah,
for whatever. Either way, but that's not a big deal. He's still at, last year he was on a full season pace of 30 stolen bases. That's what we expect out of him. If he's a double digit third home run, 30 stolen base guy, because he is their everyday shortstop. So that's just nitpicking with that lineup position. So yeah, absolutely. Where he's available, he's got to be grabbed.
Yeah, and I know it wasn't the more common for most of spring training, but for whatever it's worth, today's recording is on Friday, April 1st. He did bat second right behind, or right after Cedric Mullins, right before Ryan Mountcastle. And it sure looked
that would
like
be amazing.
The top half of that lineup was, you know, more than top half of that lineup. Everybody except for like maybe the bottom three were everyday regular players. And it looked like John Rose, Colton Cowser, and Jordan Westberg were filling in the bottom three just to get him some time. So yeah, that'll affect where he sits in the lineup. But the fact that they were still willing to put him second and not, say, sixth, where they put Rooney Odor, is a positive step in the right direction. Absolutely. If you will.
Yeah, I think we're all hoping for what Jonathan Villar did when he was at the top of that lineup.
It's hard not to think of that. All right, so you've got a couple guys here for some chip and speed, or maybe more than chip and speed. Who are you looking at?
A little more than chip in, but nothing like we'd be expecting out of Jorge Mateo. As two guys we've talked about recently, Michael A. Taylor is going to play nearly every day for the Kansas City Royals, and he'll steal double-digit bases. So if you're in need of an outfielder, in need of speed, in need of both, then it's a perfect scenario. He's only rostered in a little under half of online championships, so he's out there in about half of our 12-teamers. I've been talking about Haesung Kim all offseason long. He's my most rostered player. I did do most of my drafts prior to the Tatis injury, so that's not why I was drafting him. I thought as a utility player and improving production his second year stateside would bring him everyday playing time, even with Tatis in that lineup. And as an everyday player, he should probably steal double-digit bases as well. He's rostered a little more heavily, 72% in online championships. A lot of that, I'm sure, went up over in the recent couple of weeks since the Tatis injury. So double check, make sure he may be available.
Yeah, just the multiple position eligibility of Kim is enough to at least have him on your radar. And obviously with the situation with Tatis being out for at least the first two, if not 3 months of the season, and having to ramp back up after that, probably utilizing the DH spot for at least the first week or so, Kim's going to get a decent little run, I think, even with the other mouths to feed in that infield. All right, and to finish out the hitters here is our opportunity section. These are players that we think just have either good matchups or more playing time than we might have thought originally while you were drafting, or maybe they're about to gain some positional flexibility that are going to make them a little bit more valuable to hold on to in the future. So before we do that, let's just get some scheduling notes out there, some things to keep in consideration as you are making your bids, especially in this first only 4 days of the first week of the season. There are a decent amount of teams that do have games on all four of those days, and that is Arizona, Atlanta, the Cubs, Cincinnati, Houston, the Angels, Milwaukee, the Mets, San Diego, and Washington all play all 4 days. So that's nice. So if you're trying to grab extra at bats, or you want to get a fourth guy in the rotation, or as we talked about before, those middle relievers who have more opportunity to gain two or three innings rather than just one inning, those are the teams you want to be keeping an eye out for. And then of those teams I just listed, four of them play all seven of week two. So they've got a straight four and then a straight seven after that. And they don't have an off day until week three of the season. And that is Washington. Their first off day is not until 25th. San Diego's first off day is not till 21st. Milwaukee and Atlanta also first off day, not until the 21st. Washington, as I mentioned, their first off day is the 25th. That means they play 18 straight days. So you're going to get... They're not going with a four-man rotation to start the season like a lot of teams are able to do when they have those extra off days early on. They can skip a spot. They're not doing that. Lots of at-bats for their everyday players. So definitely look at your free agent list or if anybody's out there on the Nationals. And then, as I always mention, Colorado, what they're up to. They will be in Colorado hosting the Dodgers for opening weekend, but then they do travel to Texas to start week two. So they will be on the road to start next week, or the first full week of the season. But all your Dodgers out there, they will be enjoying the Mile High of Colorado, or Denver, Colorado, for opening weekend. And if I'm not mistaken, the Dodgers also are in Colorado, I think, for the last six games, or maybe they host Colorado for the last 6 days of the season because of the way they redid the schedule. I believe the Dodgers are hosting Colorado for the last 6 days of the season, which is insane.
Yeah, I heard another scheduling quirk like that. I forget who it was, but there's going to be a couple of those.
So a couple of guys that I'm looking at, and it's not necessarily only because of the schedule. And the first guy is an obvious one, and I need to look up his rostership, but if you drafted earlier, he's probably well available, and that's Jeremy Pena, the probable starting shortstop for the Houston Astros. I've talked about him plenty on this show, so I'm not going to get into a lot of detail, but the fact that you can get a guy who is a starting shortstop in a good lineup with a possibility of him actually leading off is somebody I think is going to garner a lot of attention in a lot of your leagues, even your shallower leagues. The defense that he has is going to keep him on the field on a regular basis. As we've talked about, he provides some speed. We talked about him last week. If you look at his Steamer 600 and compare it projections, and you compare it to Bobby Witt's Steamer 600, they are extremely close. Again, I'm not saying that it's going to happen, but what it is telling me, and it should be telling you, is that the talent is there, and that these projections, if given the playing time, which it looks like he's going to get, he has the talent to get to where you want him to be. I also think that Joey Wendell's going to get more playing time in Miami than we might have alluded to in previous episodes, whether it's in a starting role or just so much flexibility that he plays all over regularly and not just 2 or 3 days a week. I'm saying like 5 or 6 days a week in a flexible role. This is somebody who's going to chip in a lot more steals than you probably thought he was going to. He has a good bat to knock the ball around. He might not hit you a whole bunch of home runs, but that's not why you're grading him. And with his multi-positional flexibility, it makes him a lot more valuable as well. And then, as I alluded to earlier, Matt Vierling looks like he may get that center field job in Philadelphia and be pretty much the only person who can field the baseball on that Philadelphia lineup. So they will have 8 DHs and Matt Vierling in that lineup on a regular basis. So I think that if he doesn't go like 0 for his first 40, his glove is going to keep him out there as well, even as the injuries start coming back and people getting a little bit more healthier in that lineup. And this is also my shout out to my like bold rookie of the year predictions of Pena taking the AL and Vierling taking the NL. There are a lot of options out there. We don't know what full rosters look like yet. We won't know for sure until Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday of next week. But if they're going to be up at the start of the year, they out of a chance, even against the likes of Torkelson and Riley Green and what have you. These are, they all play different positions. They all fill different needs. And especially in the in Pena's case, Pena's got four games next week. And if he is the starting shortstop, he's going to play all four of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I was completely wrong on Jeremy Pena. Didn't pay nearly enough attention to him throughout draft season. But now checking every league, making sure, and if he's available, definitely somebody to have a bid on this week.
If he gets announced officially as the starting shortstop before Sunday's fab period, like
I think we're all assuming that by now, though, aren't we? What I was saying. I'm wrong because I wasn't. I was against it, but now I'm assuming he is, and I'm full blown assuming I've been wrong for the majority of draft season.
But he's going to go for triple digits, right? If it's announced officially. Yes. If it's not announced officially, you could still sneak him in.
Yeah.
I mean, because he could go, I'm not saying he will, but he could go 20-20. He has that kind of talent if he's playing every day in that lineup, especially if he finds a way to stay at the top of the lineup. But he's also the type that if he's not at the very top of the lineup, he's in the bottom third of the lineup, right? Probably.
And there's a few teams where that's not as concerning. Of course, we'd much rather than be at the top of the lineup. You're still getting more plate appearances. That's obvious. But for some teams, it's not as big a deal because we do assume they're at least going to get those four plate appearances each game. Astros being one of those teams.
Is there anybody else on any of the teams I listed on the schedule that you'll be looking at because of the schedule or any other opportunity that are coming up?
I went straight to the Washington Nationals when you said this, and there are several options and for different reasons, different scenarios. I like them all. Cesar Hernandez is their leadoff hitter, and he's only 40% rostered in online championship leagues. He hit 20 home runs last year.
That's as a leadoff hitter. The fact, right? That his ownership is only at 40%, or his rostership is only at 40%, and he's a leadoff hitter.
Yes.
And he's an everyday player.
100%. So that's option number one for sure. Yeah. Mikel Franco is probably their starting third baseman. It appears that's what's going to happen. He's never turned out to what we thought he could be, but he still hits for power with a decent batting average last year, notwithstanding. Last year's batting average, playing for different teams and up and down, I'm just tossing that out the window. If he plays every day, I like Mikel Franco. And then as much as everybody hates it, Alcides Escobar is starting for the Washington Nationals. And a lot of days last season and this spring training, he's been hitting second in the lineup. Now, Roster Resource has him further down in the lineup. He's still an everyday player. And if he's hitting at the top of the lineup, he was good batting average, runs scored. He doesn't steal bases anymore. But like you said, we get 18 straight days of this team playing baseball, and we have three everyday starters readily available. And by readily available, Mikel Franco and Alcides Escobar don't even come up in the search for the online championship leagues, which means they have not been drafted.
Right. 0% rostered. It's always a pain when I'm looking at the rostership pages and I do a control F and nobody shows up. I'm like, oh, did I type it in wrong? Or come on. No. I have to be triple sure that I'm right. It's 0% rostered. I'm like, all right. Let me double think that one. All right, let's talk some pitching as we are a Pitcher List Podcast Network member. And we'll start, of course, with our counting stats. And that, of course, is our, you know, chasing our wins and getting as many Ks as we possibly can. As we may have noticed during draft season, Ks are a little tougher, I think, to garner, especially later on in drafts I'm basically like stolen bases. Like, you better get the good ones early that aren't going to kill your ratios, or you're going to take a lot more risk just because somebody could get you a lot of Ks and kick your ratios along. That being said, I think that there are a couple of guys out there that the guys I'm going to talk about are more long-term. They're not for week one, as I alluded to. They are not guys that I'm looking, they may not start they probably won't start week one. And that is Matt Brash of Seattle, who is fighting for that fifth roster spot. And the way he's producing in spring training right now, it's going to be hard to not give it to him. And Seattle doesn't necessarily have an obvious person to plug in the five spot. And with the expanded rosters that we are seeing in April, most teams are going to carry a couple extra pitchers. And even if he doesn't take that number five spot right away, he very well could make the roster based on his production. And in long relief role, I don't think that they want to turn him into a reliever. So I think if anything, he'll have the opportunity to hold on to that five spot, at least in the first month of the season. Brash is obviously going to produce strikeouts as he has been doing throughout his minor league career and throughout this spring training, and on a much better team than who barely missed the playoffs last year. So this is the guy that, if given the opportunity, if he is the five spot, he could possibly get two starts in week two. If he doesn't get two starts in week two, he'll get him in week three, and depending on the way that the schedule works out, how many skips they make or anything like that. So that's somebody I'd be looking at. And then somebody you brought up a couple weeks ago, and that's Tyler McGill. Sure looks like he's going to find a way into that rotation. And
unfortunately,
not necessarily because of how good he is. Right. It's just circumstance. Now, of course, I'm not getting into detail about Jacob DeGrom. I have not drafted him anywhere except for one league that we decided to go a little. We were doing the podcast league, the Pitcherlist podcast league, and it's a smaller league this year. It's only 10 teams, only 10 podcasts signed up to do it. And we decided to do the Yellow Brick Road method that we've heard about, where we basically pick pitchers for the first 7 or 8 picks. Is a 10 teamer now, so let's remind everybody that we decided to go pitcher heavy in a very shallow league, and we've gotten some shaky eyes looking at us in our chat, and we're like, oh, Chad Young over at Keeper, that's an interesting build you got going on.
Yeah, yeah. And we were only something. About 4 pitchers in at that point.
Yeah. But of course I picked DeGrom in the second round because I didn't draft a DeGrom anywhere all season. I'm like, all right, I need a team with DeGrom. You said that with our first pick. We got Cole in the first round. You're like, I don't have a team with Cole on it. I'm like, all right, let's grab Cole first. I got DeGrom. And 2 hours later, the news about his shoulder comes out. Ah, should have seen that coming. But I need one team with DeGrom on it. Obviously, DeGrom's out. Scherzer's complaining about something. Oh, Kevin, you might remember what that was. It was like a leg thing. And so
sore hamstring.
We'll wait on the details on if he misses actually any time in the regular season for that. But it sure looks like Tyler McGill is going to have an opportunity to be in that rotation, whether it's the 4 spot or 5 spot now, I'm not sure. But he's going to be somebody who I just don't, even if he's not in the rotation after, even if for some reason DeGrom's not, if he's out for 2 or 3 months, he's obviously going to stay in the rotation. But if for some reason he gets kicked out of the rotation, he's going to get sent back down. Roster Resource estimated that he was going to start in AAA this year. I don't think that's going to happen anymore, or if it ever was. But if he starts in the majors, I don't see him getting sent back down. I see him being more of a long reliever just to keep him stretched out at the major league level because of all the injury concerns the Mets have always had in every capacity of their franchise. And so he'd be somebody I'd be looking at for the long haul and not so much for just this first week.
Absolutely. And I'll just go ahead and add my name to this list because we already talked about him. That's Carlos Hernandez. And it's the same with all three of these guys. The earlier you drafted, the more likely they are to be available in your league. All three of these guys started getting drafted more heavily as draft season went along. So always check. Once again, we're going to say that multiple times an episode all year long, but always check. But the earlier you drafted, the more likely it is that you'll have that chance. And especially with McGill, and he second outing of the year should be at home against the Diamondbacks. Got to love that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, always obviously look at the schedule. Seattle's schedule for Brash isn't that great until you get to like week 3. He has an opportunity of playing like 2 really strong teams or a mix of a strong and a weak team. So it depends on how they manipulate the rotation early on. So that is something to look at as well. But it's good measurement. I think we talked about this with the Arizona schedule, or at least I thought about it in my head when we were talking about where I was thinking about Madison Bumgarner and other options in Arizona. like their first month of the season is not that great, not good at all, but their May is stupendous. And so if you can wade out the first month of a Madison Bumgarner or somebody like that, or in this case, I'm talking about Matt Brash in Seattle. If he can prove that he can hold his own against the strong opponents early on, you're going to feel that much stronger about having him in your lineup once he gets to those, quote, easier. I love when I use air quotes on a audio podcast for everybody to see those stronger or weaker opponents later on. And we'll have more information on that. There's going to be a team like the Giants were last year that we all are writing off now that just find a way to put it all together and do something really special. And then we're going to, or like the way the Tigers were putting up the number one offense for the 2 month period last year. Like there's going to be teams that kind of buck what you're expecting, but at least you need to go in with as much information as possible to make certain assumptions. All right, let's go into ratios. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this personally. I don't know how many players you want to talk about here, but like Colin McHugh is basically who I'm talking about here. And it's not Colin McHugh specifically. It's Colin McHugh, the type of player. And these are the guys I will be spending most of my time putting into my queue this week for everything we talked about earlier in the podcast. Get those extra 2 to 5 innings that these middle relievers, long relievers can put in. You're going to get them for $1 to $5 at most, especially if you have 7 of them in your queue and you're filling 2 or 3 holes. And I'll drop, maybe I'll hold on to Colin McHugh a little bit longer because he's so good. But if I end up with somebody else lower down my list, I got no problem dropping them unless they're filling a different need for a different reason the following week, especially in those shallow leagues where I'm looking for the 2-star pitchers or something like that to add innings. But this first week, man, I just want the innings. I just want 5 extra innings. If I can get 5 extra innings in these 4 days, I'm golden. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we don't even need multi innings per appearance out of some of these guys. It's nice when we get them. That's why Colin McHugh is so good in this category. But I look at all these teams that have a full 7-game schedule in the first full week of the season, right? The Yankees. So we're talking Chad Green and Loaisiga. They're probably drafted in your league. If not, throw a couple of bucks on them. Might not be enough, but the Royals, Josh Staumont might be available. Excuse me. Amir Garrett now with the Kansas City Royals, probably available in your league. They have a 7-game week. So in these 7-game weeks, they could also vulture a save if the team has 2 or 3 nice days in a row and their closer has been out there a couple of times. Other team, I was just going down the list looking at these. The Atlanta Braves opened the season. They were on your list. They're not playing 18 like Washington, but they go as far as roster resource goes, playing a game every day. So Minter, Matzik, and these guys, that not only are they going to get us ratios, get us a couple strikeouts, there's a good chance that they could vulture a win or a save for you.
Yeah, good segue, Kevin. Well done. We'll go right into save vulturing. And so I got a pair of guys I want to ask you about. And one of them we talked about earlier, Yimi Garcia, Toronto. And I want to compare him to somebody who everybody doesn't think has the job, but very well could. But it comes with the cost, the fact that he pitches in Colorado, and that's Robert Stevenson. Now, obviously, everybody thinks that, not everybody, a good chunk of people assume that Alex Colome is the closer because of his track record, because literally somehow he finds his way into the closer role everywhere he goes and somehow gets 30 saves somehow most of the time. But Bud Black came out and said that, I'll paraphrase, he prefers his closer to be able to strike out a lot of guys. Colome, not his strong suit. He just finds the way to get saves, and it's usually not by way of strikeouts. He'll go a full inning and get a save with no strikeouts a lot of the time. So Robert Stevenson, on the other hand, can average, you can get up to the 10K per 9 average that you're looking for, at least Black is looking for. In the situation where you have Jordan Romano questionable at the very least for opening day, and Yimi Garcia being the, in my mind, the obvious choice to step in at even for a short period of time versus a guy like Robert Stevenson in Colorado. So you've got that going against him. He hasn't been named the closer. Got that name against them as well. Who would you rather take a flyer on? Or put it this way, if they're both going to be in that queue that we keep talking about, who's going to be higher on that step ladder?
I think Yimi Garcia is going to be above Stevenson and the only reason is the Rockies have the Dodgers coming to town. And Toronto
how many opportunities are going to be in them? Even though they have four, how many opportunities are there?
And Toronto's got the Texas Rangers coming to town. So that is the deal breaker. Now, if I'm hoping this works out long term, like with Stevenson, it could. For the reasons you gave, if it's Stevenson, the first couple of save opportunities that the Rockies have this season, he probably keeps that job. And we saw success with Bard last season. We've seen it when at the end of Wade Davis's career, when he was no longer an all-star, but still put up over 30 saves. Granted, it comes with a 4+ ERA. Hopefully it's only about 50 or 60 innings of that ERA. A Colorado Rockies closer can be valuable. So if I'm looking long-term, that would be the play. If I'm looking for early season and just trying to snag a couple, I'd probably go Garcia just because of the matchups.
Yeah, I think something that those who don't do this regularly should be watching in Stevenson's case in Colorado, like you alluded to, how many save opportunities are there going to be? How many wins are the Colorado Rockies going to see against the Dodgers? We'll see. But where Stevenson is used, even in those losses, because he will find time, like they will get him into a game. Like,
oh, absolutely.
They're not going to have him go 4 days straight without him. All the relievers are going to get at least, you know, some kind of action, at least the top end relievers, because you want to keep him going from spring training, of course. Who he's facing, what part of the lineup they're facing, how much are they down by, how much are they up by, how much leverage is he being put into to really, and then what's happening? Is he striking guys out? If he's striking guys out, Bud Black's going to he's going to be paying attention. And so even if he's not getting saves, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's not going to get them. It all depends on where he's being used and what he's producing. So keep an eye out for that. So even though you don't see the SV next to his name or next to anybody's name in Colorado, doesn't mean that there's not an obvious hierarchy going into the following week. Any other bullpen situations that are worth, I still speculated on Richard Rodriguez just because he is a free agent still. And I still believe he's going to sign somewhere, and he's going to sign somewhere that is going to give him more opportunity to make himself more valuable in the future. I believe he has 2 years of controller. So whoever he signs, even if he signs for a 1 year deal this year, he'll get arbitration next year as well, which makes him even more. I don't know if it makes him more or less of a trade candidate on a team, but he very well could go to. I still believe he could go to Miami now with Floro not being ready, or go to a situation that's a little bit murkier, maybe even in Washington or something like that. So he's somebody I speculated on. I'm not sure that I will be bidding on him here, but I definitely speculated on him in a couple fab leagues that I don't necessarily know I will be dropping him until I know for sure where he ends up, unless I got hit with a bunch of injuries and I needed the bench spot or something like that. But are there any other bullpens worth that have changed so drastically that you'll be keeping a strong eye on this first fab period?
It's not a drastic change, but I did speculate, especially in October and November, in a couple of draft and hold leagues, I was speculating on Pierce Johnson in San Diego. Now it sounds like that Emilio Pagan has got a really good chance to start out with that role. And if that's the case, he's only 20% rostered in online championship leagues. We saw this last year. If he goes out there and gets the job done, he'll keep the job. It wasn't him. It was Melanson last year, but we didn't expect that. But like Melanson, Pagan has experience in the role. If he goes out there, gets the job done, he's probably got their ninth inning job. So definitely worth a speculative add this weekend. Maybe expensive in some leagues. I wouldn't go overboard, but I definitely somebody I'd try to land.
I'm loving everything you have to say about this, Kevin. And it's mostly just because of
you were drafting Pagan when I was drafting Pierce Johnson.
Yeah, no, I was not. I was drafting Pagan about 10 rounds after you were drafting.
Even worse, right?
I got plenty of Pagans in rounds like 43 through 49. We'll see what ends up happening, obviously, in San Diego. There are a lot of options, as we talked about last week.
They still have six closers listed, but I forget where I saw the quote today, and I forget the other one it's narrowed down to, but it sounded like they have it narrowed down to two guys, Pagan being one of them.
Pierce Johnson, I thought Suarez was the other one. Suarez, yes. We read the same thing, yeah.
Yep, Suarez or Pagan. That's exactly what I said. Yeah, and the waterfall bid, have them both in there, right?
I have all six.
Right. Yeah, whoever gets the job, I think, will run with it unless they end up performing badly. Like I said, that's what we saw with Melanson last year. They gave him the first shot. He handled it. He wasn't amazing, but because he was handling the job and getting the three outs with the lead still intact, he kept that job all year.
The thing that worries me the most about San Diego is that most of the time, right, you can look at these closer battles and you can usually at least sway yourself toward the guy who's getting paid the most. Right. Nobody's getting paid in this bullpen. Yeah. Everybody who's getting paid has a bat in their hands in San Diego. Obviously, you got Yu Darvish, and you know, the rotation's got some money in there, of course. But nobody's really getting a big payday, so there's not like an obvious answer. Raisel Iglesias is going to be the closer no matter what because of his contract. Liam Hendricks, obviously, these guys are talented. It's different. But Will Smith was going to be the closer in Atlanta until somebody else gets paid more. Oh, lo and behold, someone's getting paid more than him now, and Kenley Jansen's going to be the closer there. And so that you can't even lean on that in San Diego. All right, our last category is our wild card category. Kevin, I don't know if you have any players in here. I don't have a specific player to recommend here. It's more of a recommendation or a realization that I realized last year, and it looks like it's carried over to this year in the NFBC format, as most people realize now, is that if a prospect or somebody who's not on a major league roster is not drafted in your league, you can't pick them up in season until they get put on the major league roster and make it their way into a game. So if they get called up onto the major league roster on Sunday, sorry, you won't be able to get them because they need 24 hours to get them into the system. That's not the case for week one fab because major league rosters aren't set yet. And so all the players that you could have drafted are still in your player pool. So if there is a prospect that you had been eyeing but didn't get a chance to draft, but nobody drafted and he's still available, get your bid in now. We talked about this obviously last year with Bobby Witt Jr. That didn't work out. He never got called up. So take this with a little bit of a grain of salt, but it depends on who you're targeting. But these are the guys like Matt. I'll usually use Matt Brash because he doesn't have any major league experience. There's a chance he doesn't make the roster, but when he does get called up, he'll be in the rotation. If Matt Brash doesn't make the roster, it's because they want to keep him in a rotation. And then when they call him up, they don't want him in the bullpen. He'll make his way into the rotation. So somebody like that, if you want an opportunity to have them on your roster and you have the space, this is the time to get your bid in because you're going to have to pay the Fabapalooza prices in season when they do get the call up. So I don't know if anybody fits that bill for you, Kevin, or if you had anybody else in mind. There's just a straight wild card. Doesn't really fit any of the categories that we talked about earlier that is worth keeping an eye on, or who you got?
Yeah. Going along with what you're saying, 100% throughout draft season, this has come up quite a bit in this episode. Depends on when we drafted. Throughout draft season, we've got much more comfortable with Riley Green, Spencer Torkelson. They're going to start the season. We don't know about Riley Green now. As we're recording on late Friday evening, I don't think we know the results of his x-rays yet from a possible foot injury today. But it's looking more and more likely that some of these guys are going to start the season with the big league roster. And the other point that we've made several times in the show, always check. Julio Rodriguez is available in an online championship league. So somebody out there may be able to sneak that in because not everybody's going to check, right? Not everybody's going to check. We think there's a good chance he's starting the season with the team now. Some other names. One, I know for good reason, the Chicago Cubs have gotten a really bad rap over the past couple of seasons of where they've spent money, how they've treated their young players. But they've done a couple of weird things in this offseason. Oh, maybe they think they're putting something together here. And if that's the case, we may see Brennan Davis earlier than we previously thought. He's 2% rostered in online championships. He's somebody I'd like to have at least the first shot at wait a couple of weeks, see what's happening, and then remember, know that he is available in the player pool in my league after I drop him, and keep a real close eye out to try to grab him back up before that Fabapalooza you're talking about.
That's a legitimate strategy as well. Exactly. Even if you get somebody this week that you don't want to, you might not want to hold on to for 2 months, keep them for 2 or 3 weeks, drop them quietly. Hopefully don't tweet about it. And hopefully people aren't paying attention to your drop list the way we're telling you to pay attention to the drop list every week. And just because you drop Brennan Davis in mid-April or late April doesn't mean somebody's going to pick him up the very following week. The reason you dropped him is because it doesn't look like he's going to come up right away. More than likely, other people have more, they have holes that they need to
and
be
if
filling.
They do, because this early in the year, they have spots that they may not be able to wait it out. It'll right. still be a, can still become available.
That's an excellent point to bring up. Is definitely a strategy you can take by drafting a player and dropping him, or picking him up in Fab this week on the cheap and then dropping him 2 or 3 weeks later, just in, if you have that flexibility on your roster. And we got a mailbag in here for the first week, which is appropriate. It's the first Fab period. Let's take some questions. What's the question that came in, Kev?
Yeah, this came from at Urban Baboon on Twitter. Actually, a friend of mine, Douglas Boyle, and he said he had the question. It wasn't just for me. It was for our podcast. Not necessarily Fab related, but I found it interesting. So I added it on here. And he asked, now that the designated hitter is the universal rule and a position in Major League Baseball, should we be adding a designated hitter position to our fantasy leagues? And he goes on to say, before you say the utility position we already have, he had two other questions. Because he proposed this in his home league, switching out the fifth outfielder for a designated hitter starting in 2023, as there will be 30 teams worth of eligible designated hitters. And his response when someone brought up the utility was, first, why would we require someone to qualify at third base? A Major League Baseball team can choose to let any player on their roster play third base, just like designated hitter, for using that example with a utility. And he said, more importantly, if we're going to have universal designated hitter in Major League Baseball, that's a position now. It's good enough for baseball. Is it not good enough for the leagues that we're playing in?
So I thought about this. I saw this at the beginning. I told you I wanted you to read this so I had more time to think about it. And I will say, until we start seeing players, 30 players regularly playing DH, maybe not 30, but enough players regularly DHing, and only Nelson Cruz's, until we start getting 20 or 25 Nelson Cruz's, David Ortiz, Edgar Martinez, DH style players, that this is not an option for me personally. And the difference is third baseman is a third baseman, and that's all they play. And that's why there's a position in my leagues for a third baseman. Yes, there's also a corner infielder. And yes, there's also a utility spot that a third baseman can play in. But there's not enough DH only players to warrant giving them a designated spot on the lineup in my fantasy lineup. Does that make sense?
It does.
I understand that. Yeah, there's going to be players that, quote, qualify as a DH because they'll play 10 in season or 20 throughout the course of last season, and they'll qualify for the position just like they would qualify at third base. Or if they were a shortstop and they moved them over to Suarez in Cincinnati last year, qualifying at shortstop once he played 10 games. But there's not going to be many players, especially this first year. I don't think there's going to be a lot of players that teams give that position to. There'll be a handful, but I don't think a lot of National Leagues. We have going into this season, we only had three. In the NFBC, there's only three designated hitter only players in the first like 300 ADP. And that's Gavin Sheets is the lowest one. And then Franmil Reyes and Nelson Cruz. Not even Stanton doesn't even, JD Martinez, these guys who were like, they're playing enough in the outfield to not be DH only. And so I would say that's my gut. My gut says until we start seeing a bunch more David Ortiz type players, then that's not going to be a position that needs to be in a fantasy lineup. I bet you can do it though. I bet you that's a position that formats will start at as an option instead of the utility spot, just to make things a little bit more interesting.
But that's the key, what you just said for me. Yeah, not instead of an outfield spot, not moving to a one catcher, which is, I think, how some leagues would want to do it. No, instead of the utility. The whole reason when we have a utility, I would guess, is because we had players that didn't qualify at a position. Now we manipulate it in other ways, and I could have Pete Alonso, Josh Bell, and Anthony Rizzo all in my starting lineup using a corner and utility. But I think the way to do it, and I actually like the idea of it, because there'll be plenty of players that get 20 days, 20 games at designated hitter. We'll have at least 60, probably more players, average 2+ per team, I'm guessing. So I think I like having it instead of the utility, and that would probably spread some guys around the player pool at other positions a little more as well in doing that.
Yeah, it definitely would change that utility spot in your roster. If you changed it to you have to have DH'd 10 days or 20 days, depending on your formats, your platform's rules, or the settings of your league, it would definitely, it'd be interesting in that scenario.
I'm all for making more strategy and harder. I'm always for that. That's why we like deeper leagues, right?
That's true. All right, speaking of strategy, Kevin, we'll give you the opportunity to give our listeners some parting words as they continue to prep throughout Sunday for their first fab.
We've talked about so much of it just to this episode, and obviously all off season long. So I don't have a whole lot or anything specific to add, but one thing, I know I said this at least a couple of times last season, I'll start off with it this season. All the little things add up to a big thing. Make sure you got your obvious drops. Fill that position. You may not think you're going to need them. Obviously, this first week, we still have 4 days. Guys could get injured even. So you may not think you're going to need someone in that spot, but you might. Definitely once our full weeks start, when you can change your hitting lineups on Friday in FBC formats, you may not be planning on needing someone that weekend, but you might. So definitely don't have any dead spots on your roster. Obviously, positions of need, check that out, and just go down your list, all the little things, because if just one of them happens to happen and you needed that, it can make a big difference.
Absolutely. It's going to wrap it up for episode 53 of On the Wire. Please make sure to subscribe, share, and review the podcast wherever you're listening. We will be back every Sunday with detailed fab breakdown throughout the 2022 season. And of course, keep a lookout for Kevin's companion article over at pitcherlist.com. It comes out every Sunday afternoon as well. Keep a lookout for all new episodes every day across the Pitcherlist Fantasy Baseball podcast feed and the Pitcherlist General Baseball podcast feed, wherever you listen to your podcast. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80 Gray. That's all spelled out. Kevin is at Haston Kevin. And of course, follow the pod itself at On the Wire Pod. Thank you for listening. And on behalf of Kevin Haston, I am Adam Howe. And with that, we bid you goodbye.